Hello, and welcome back to Project 2028. This is the second episode of Season 2, and we are so excited to be giving you this episode talking about Trump's cabinet nominees.
All right, Trump has been appointing at pretty close to breakneck speed, and we have a lot of them to talk about. We have roughly 15 appointed positions that will require Senate approval, and then some non-cabinet, non-Senate confirmation positions, a total like 24. So we have a lot to talk about. It's just going to be a brief summary of each of them, and then we hope we can kind of inform you on what it's going to look like and what Trump's trying to get done before he even gets into office with his transition. So we'll start us off. All right, to start off, one of the most important positions in the Trump administration, Secretary of State, he's going to be particularly pertinent, obviously, maybe trying to avoid some trade wars and stuff that we'll talk about in a subsequent episode. But we're kind of going to do a bit of a position overview, and then we'll talk a bit about the nominee. Position overview, it's pretty self-explanatory. Obviously, Secretary of State leads U.S. diplomacy and foreign policy all over the world. That's why it's kind of so key to the Trump campaign. Obviously, now you have these tariffs and new things that are obviously a bit nuanced, especially in, you know, more of a free trade world than ever. They represent the U.S. policy-wise at the United Nations. Obviously, Elise Stefanik, who we'll talk about later, will represent those interests to the United Nations, but he would mainly choose policy. And just some basic facts. Elle has some stuff she wants to say. He's a U.S. senator from Florida, former presidential candidate, obviously, in 2016. He's quite strong on foreign policy, particularly in Latin America and China. This is kind of a common denominator with the Trump, at least appointed administration. Alex Wong, the deputy national security advisor, also has a specialty in those kind of areas. He served as North Korean.
And we'll get to him later?
Yes, we will get to him later. Okay.
So yeah, he's the son of Cuban immigrants, and he likes to emphasize his working class roots to voters. He's been representing Florida for more than a decade as a representative.
He is Mormon.
Yeah, he's Mormon. He has a vocal, he's like been a big supporter of Israel and an opponent of Iran. He has rejected calls for a ceasefire in the Israel-Hamas war, and he supported aiding to Ukraine to defend themselves to the extent we can afford, to the extent we can sustain it. He called for Russian invasion for Ukraine and the resulting war to be brought to a conclusion on November 6th. So we see him talking a lot about the wars that we're seeing going on, that have been going on for a year, for in some cases, and four, I think, in others.
Yeah, I think three or four.
And that's obviously a big point that Trump brought up a lot about how these wars wouldn't be happening, so it's interesting to see his stance on that, especially as someone who will be dealing kind of in that realm.
All right, and that's going to move us perfectly, talking about wars and defense, into our nominee, Pete Hegseth, former Fox News host and U.S. Army officer, served three tours. He advocates for strong military and national security policies. He is quite combative of, you know, the higher ranks and echelons of the military. And then just kind of a position overview. All again, pretty self-explanatory. Oversees the Defense Department, and they're responsible for military strategy, defense policy, and the management of all of the branches of the U.S. Armed Forces. They act mainly to the president and in accordance with the Joint Chiefs.
He's super interesting when it comes to how people are perceiving his nomination. It's pretty controversial. He has been kind of seen as a person associated with white supremacy groups, as he has a tattoo that kind of attaches to that. He's also vocally been opposed to diversity, equity, and inclusion when it comes to the military. He disapproves of women serving in combat, and that's kind of where he stands with things such as
policy.
Yeah. Okay, Rutana, you want to talk?
Okay, so another kind of controversial thing about him was that when he was a Fox News host in 2017, he was accused of sexual assault. So The woman said that she doesn't have a lot of recollection of that night, but she remembers going to his hotel and saying no a lot, and she says that she did not consent to it. So this is very interesting. It brings up concerns for a lot of people about him being in power, and does anyone else have thoughts on this?
She shouldn't recollect that night, because she signed an NDA, when he was serving as a Fox News host, so he could get it kind of away from him, because it was at the middle of a Me Too movement, which it would have destroyed his career if it had ever been as much as officially published in any major news organization.
I'm going to stop you now to save you from biting the bullet here.
All right.
When it comes to sexual assault, you have to be really careful with your word choices, so we're going to end that conversation right.
Okay, to move on, Attorney General, obviously another big position, especially in Trump 2.0. He's put a bit more focus on it. Obviously, there was a focus on it beforehand, but, you know, ever more now. This has a bit of backstory. You probably know. If you don't, then
I'm quite surprised,
but we'll give you a quick rundown. She basically inherited the role after a man named Matt Gaetz resigned because he thought he was causing distraction to the Trump campaign. There were many allegations of illicit drug use, among others, that's kind of surrounded his nomination. He eventually pulled out, and she was appointed only hours later. She is the former Florida Attorney General. She's known for her work on law enforcement and especially on consumer protection laws, especially in Florida. And just kind of a position overview, Attorney General, they obviously lead the Department of Justice, Merrick Garland, right now, and they serve as the chief legal advisor to the president.
She works for the American First Policy Institute, which launched in 2021 by former Trump officials to promote his policies and agenda. So she's really loyal to him. A lot of his elects that's one of the most common things they have. They're pretty loyal to Trump. They're people call them loyalists. They've kind of supported him through everything that he's been through his court cases, through his loss of the 2020 election, through his re-election process, all of that. So that's something that we see kind of sown throughout each of these candidates, and it does not disappear when we get to Pam.
Yes.
She was the first woman to hold the office of Florida Attorney General. And she was also a key figure in the court fight against Obamacare, which are also notable things about her.
Yes. To move on, nothing else, right?
Nope.
Okay, so Homeland Security, Christy Noem, just kind of a quick position overview. As you can hear, Luciana said something in the background I'll get to in just a second. Luciana's called Dibs. Okay. She was the Secretary of Homeland Security. Primarily, they lead efforts, you know, U.S. immigration. Now it's becoming more and more cybersecurity and disaster response teams. Obviously, FEMA was a big point of contention before the election. She's governor of South Dakota. She's known for her conservative stances, you know, immigration, federalism. Luciana has something she wants to say, particularly on the matter.
So for a while, people were like, oh, maybe Trump will choose her for vice president. But then she wrote this book about how, and we talked about this in our first episode, actually, which is crazy, but about vice president candidates. She wrote a book where she talked about how she shot her dog, and people were like, ooh, that's a little interesting. So that's just kind of a funny tidbit. And she was a vice presidential option for a while, but then shot her dog. So.
Yeah, okay. Nothing?
Nope.
Okay, so to move on, the Secretary of Labor, Lori Chavez, I'm sorry if I butcher it, Duremer. Secretary of Labor obviously leads the Department of Labor. They address, you know, workplace conditions, rules like that, and then labor laws and primarily job creation. So just kind of an overview for her. She's a U.S. representative from Oregon, obviously a deep blue state. She's kind of an outlier, especially on abortion, but we'll get that to probably in a different episode. She's, you know, been focused on job growth and economic opportunities for working Americans for almost her whole time in Congress. So that's kind of where she stands. Luciana, anything? No?
I'm good.
All right, we'll move right on to one of Trump's key positions that he cares about most, the director of the CIA. John Ratcliffe will now be the director of the CIA, obviously. This is probably the most obvious one of all of them. They oversee intelligence gathering and national security analysis that come from the CIA. Obviously, the CIA is foreign, is not used in the United States. He's a former U.S. congressman, director of national intelligence, and he has been quite a strong advocate for intelligence reform and counterintelligence. Obviously, intelligence over the past few years has changed quite a lot. Right now, they're looking at photos of the guy from The Office compared to him, and they are remarkably similar. I'm looking at it right now.
They look so similar.
I don't know how I pieced that together.
It's like the downturned eyebrows and like little rainbows over his eyes.
Look up
pictures of all these people, and you will understand
what we're kind
of, all the Elacs.
Yeah, you can hear the giggling in the background. But, you know, intelligence reform, counterintelligence has obviously been a thing. Especially as cyber intelligence has kind of skyrocketed in the past few years, AI advancements in the military. So that's kind of where John Ratcliffe is. Anything from you guys chime in?
No, I think you got our point when we did our little comparison image here.
Okay, something quite close, so I'll kind of differentiate it, is the DNI, Director of National Intelligence. Her name is Tulsi Gabbard. She actually is a former Democrat. But the Director of National Intelligence, they do something quite close to the Director of CIA, but they oversee all U.S. intelligence agencies, so obviously most of the branches of the government and, you know, people who are represented by the Joint Chief will have an intelligence arm. Obviously, there are separate intelligence arms, NSA, CIA. FBI is not an intelligence arm, technically. It's kind of complicated. But they see the intelligence strategy, so she might pass down to the, you know, intelligence apparatuses. She's a former representative from Hawaii. She's focused on, you know, foreign policy, military service, national security. Obviously, these people are appointed to positions and boards of which they've served on for most of their life. So nothing crazy here. No big controversies. So, yeah. Anything, guys? You want to go over Medicare and Medicaid?
Sure. Okay. So for Medicare and Medicaid, Trump nominated Mehmet Oz. So the administrator for Medicare systems, which is the CMS, is responsible for the nation's health insurance programs for seniors and low-income individuals. So an overview on him, he is a television personality and doctor, and he's known for promoting health-related media and lifestyle changes.
Yeah, so also ran for Senate in Pennsylvania in 2022 midterms, lost to a man named John Fetterman, who, if you follow politics, you're quite attuned to. He's, you know, obviously a television doctor. Many people call him Dr. Oz, if that's how you know him. And that's kind of where that stands. And we're going to kind of move on to a Republican from a blue state, the EPA, Lee Zeldin.
Yeah, this position is responsible for protecting public health and environment. He's a congressman from New York and has strong conservative stances on energy policies and regulatory reform.
Yeah, just to kind of go over what the EPA does, because it's not as self-explanatory as some of the other agencies, they basically protect public health, you know, obviously with oil disasters that would be domestic. They would have a hand in that. Obviously, when there was that, I forgot the name of it, there was a train disaster, I think it was in Pennsylvania a year or two ago. That was a significant EPA effort to get that all cleaned up relatively quickly. And that kind of moves us, not that smoothly, but relatively smoothly, because we're all talking about cabinet positions, onto the UN ambassador, Elise Stefanik.
She's,
I mentioned her earlier.
She's also from New York.
She's also from New York. I should have done that as my transition.
Should've.
But she is, she's getting more notable by the week or month. However you look at it, if you watch C-SPAN, you would know her most definitely. But the UN ambassador takes foreign policy views, usually from the Secretary of State, passes them on to the United Nations. They serve as the ambassador. They coordinate international diplomacy. Congresswoman from New York, she really focused on national security and military funding. Foreign policy, which is how she got notable, was at the hearings on college anti-Semitism last year, around this time, actually. She was quite the attack dog for the conservative side. I'm laughing because I remember the hearings, and they're quite fun to watch. But that's kind of how she got notable, especially in the foreign policy space, her defense of Israel. And that's kind of where we leave it with her.
Yeah, so we're going to move into the House.
Another man related to New York dumped a carcass in Central Park. the one, the only, Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Oh, my
God. I actually really want to talk about
okay,
him.
Okay, talk about him.
So, when he dropped out, suspended his campaign.
Can I say something quickly? He has done quite an incredible shift. He went from a Democratic nominee to a Republican nominee to dropping out to becoming Trump's one of Trump's health advisors in less than a year. I mean, you got to give it to the man. It's pretty impressive.
He is very passionate, that is for sure. So when he suspended his campaign, it was speculated that he told Trump that he would endorse him or told Kamala, both of them. Obviously, we see who got elected. We see who followed up through that. That was quite the sign.
Okay, keep
Goodness
going.
Goodness. So when Kennedy said he would suspend his campaign, he obviously called Trump, and it has been speculated that he said that he would endorse Trump if he got to head the Health and Human Services Department. And we now see that he is the head, so this is a very plausible kind of speculation that has... Yeah.
Trump came through with his promise.
Yes, basically so. So, obviously he's related to John F. Kennedy.
Yeah, no, obviously his relation is one of his key assets, but he's an environmental attorney. It's what he's been for most of his life. If you know his voice, it's quite a...
He sounds like he smokes a pack a day.
He does. and he used to be, he used to be a drug addict, obviously.
Oh,
his father and his uncle were violently murdered. So that he probably has a lot of trauma, but he overcame it and he became an environmental attorney and an activist.
Must be a great therapist.
Obviously, Luchon's about to talk about this, but he's known for some controversial opinions on environmental advocacy, vaccines, public health. But he's quite a progressive voice, especially when you look at the environment in the Trump campaign. So, Luchana, you want to chime in?
Yes, please.
Okay, so I'm going to be talking about some of the interesting, but maybe not super factual, theories that aren't exactly factual, such as that vaccines can cause autism. This is one of his main ones. Yes, Ryan?
No, I just said yep. I was laughing kind of at the claim.
Mm.
You can keep going.
This has been disproven by the CDC and the World Health Organization, but it's something that he very strongly believes in. He has also claimed that Anthony Fauci exaggerated the pandemic to promote vaccines, and he said that COVID-19 targets Caucasians and Black people. He has also said that the FDA suppresses advancements in health. Wireless technology can cause cancer. He has promoted the theory that AIDS is not caused by HIV. He says that fluoride, which you find in, like, public water and toothpaste, causes diseases. Mass shootings are linked to prescription drugs. The 2004 presidential election was stolen from John Kerry. The CIA was involved in the assassination of John F. Kennedy. Sirhan may not have been guilty of killing his father. Ooh, I cannot pronounce
this. This is quite a list. Yeah. I think, obviously, what we can glean from this is that he has his fair share of controversies. He's been around for a while, and he's had a lot of stuff to say, factual or not. He's quite the contentious person. But we're going to move on to a fairly mild-mannered and fairly rich person, manager of the Interior, Secretary of the Interior, Doug Burgum, former presidential candidate this cycle. He was a former executive of Microsoft. He is a billionaire. And he will manage the Secretary of Interior, obviously. If you've ever been to a national park, that's them. So all those rangers are basically under his purview. Federal lands, wildlife management, and then obviously reservations for Native Americans. Governor, North Dakota. We also have a governor from South Dakota, as we mentioned earlier. So we got all the Dakotas. His main focus would be on energy development, infrastructure, and conservation. Sorry. But this when he was at Microsoft, and Microsoft today is heavily reliant on power. They just bought a nuclear power plant on Three Mile Island. If you're older and you're listening to this, you might know what happened at Three Mile Island. And they're trying to rebuild it. He has quite the experience in the energy space. And that's kind of why he was chosen. I thought he might have been chosen for something a bit different, but we'll talk about that position later. Luchana, anything? No? No. All right, so we're going to move right on to the VA, Doug Collins, who is the appointee. You know, Veterans Affairs, they are in charge of basically managing services and benefits for the veterans of our military. He's a former U.S. congressman from Georgia, and he advocates, you know, veterans' rights, reforming veteran services. Obviously, these guys, their congressional stances and their congressional focuses obviously line up with most of the time with what they do. And now we move on to Scott Bessent. Bessent. I can't say his name. I've had problems saying his name. Bessent. My fault. Secretary of the Treasury, overseeing economic policy, you know, financial regulations, all that stuff. It's probably going to be put down a lot. Regulation is usually cut by conservative administrations and put back up by more liberal ones. But that's kind of what he is. He's a former hedge fund manager, so obviously he has his fair share of economic insights. And, you know, his backgrounds are kind of in economics and financial strategy, especially in New York. But if you kind of look to another one of his picks that's been less controversial, just like Scott, you'll find Brooke Rollins leading the Secretary of Agriculture. They oversee something most people don't care about, obviously more rural than urban. They oversee food policy, food safety, and farm policy, and rural development, which is kind of what I was just referencing. She's the former head of Texas Public Policy Foundation. It's a bit of a conservative-leaning organization, but they focus on public policy, especially in rural areas. And she focuses on She focused and lobbied for agriculture reform and rural economic development, obviously in accordance with the Texas Public Policy Foundation. And that's going to move us right to the Secretary of Commerce that kind of connects with the Secretary of Treasury, just in the financial landscape. Howard Lutnick, Secretary of Commerce, he's going to oversee U.S. trade, economic development, industrial innovation. He's the CEO of Cantor Fitzgerald, a company quite prolific in a few markets.
He focuses on business and economic growth, international trade.
Yeah, so obviously you see the connection right back to the position. Not much to say on him, not much controversy. Luciana would obviously chime in if there was any. And that's going to move us right to the Secretary of Transport, Sean Duffy.
And we will get a vocal change in here, and Luciana will give us this one.
Whew.
Actually, I will be taking this one. So this is a position that manages U.S. transportation infrastructure, including highways, aviation, and mass transit. So a little bit about Sean Duffy. He is a former U.S. congressman from Wisconsin, and he focuses on infrastructure and economic development.
Yeah, that's pretty much. Obviously, as we're going down the list, especially with cabinet appointees, and then we'll go to the other list, it's going to get a lot quicker. So that's kind of why. And then we're going to move straight to the Secretary of the FDA,
which is Martin A. McCary,
I think.
So, obviously, everyone knows what the FDA is, responsible for ensuring the safety of food, drugs, and medical devices. So, Martin is a surgeon and health policy expert. He's known for his advocacy on medical reform and public health initiatives. We move into energy. So, the nominee for this is Chris Wright. So, this position oversees national energy policy, nuclear security, and renewable energy development.
Also, they have an intelligence agency, if anybody ever knew that. A little fun fact.
Thank you for that tidbit.
Quite nice.
So, Chris is the CEO of Liberty
Oil Field
Services, which I guess
it's a company mostly domestic that usually extracts oil from the ground, if you couldn't tell already.
Yeah, so he's an advocate for energy independence and innovation
in fossil fuels and kind of renewable energy markets. So that's kind of where that's going to lead. And then we're going to lead to something. This episode might or might not be up before the SNL on Wednesday, which would be the Secretary of Education. I hope there's a skit where she jumps in like a WWE ring in the classroom. That's my goal, but it might not happen. Who knows?
Yes.
Education, Linda McMahon. You might know one of her relatives. I think it might be her husband, who is a manager of WWE. She has been an executive there for quite a while. She will manage the Secretary of Education.
Yeah, which is interesting. This is her second time being a part of the Trump administration. She led the Small Business Administration in 2017 until 2019. She ran twice for the Senate in Connecticut losing to Richard.
Richard Blumenthal. Because there's a few Richards that ran in the past.
My bad.
Richard's also a common last name.
I understand.
Didn't read the next sentence. As well as Chris Murphy. She does not have a long track record when it comes to education. She served a year on Connecticut's Board of Education in 2009 and previously supported school choice.
So why do we think she would be a good pick for the Trump administration? Why was she his choice?
I mean, obviously, you're going to see school choice is obviously a conservative. Sorry, I'm just having a hard time. I'm trying to come up with a connection. School choice is obviously, you know, more of a Republican agenda than anything else, especially in more conservative states like Texas, where it's been quite a contentious issue about issuing vouchers, state and federal, for schools outside of your district that may or may not be private or magnet, depending on where you live. So that's been quite a thing. Education department, they oversee some education policy. Test scores have been going down. Trump said that he might or might not get rid of it. Maybe he gets rid of it. His test scores have only been going down. If you look at OECD countries, most of them have been going up. But that's a separate tangent. So that's just kind of where that is.
One of her controversies, Latrona, you want to lead us into that really quick?
I'm not going to say I know a ton about this because Elle and I were just peeking into it. But according to CNN, she was sued for allegedly enabling the sexual abuse of children.
Just to be fully clear, just for full disclosure, so we don't mislead our listeners, she did not ever sexually abuse any children or participate in the sexual abuse of any children. There were allegations that she may or may not have knew about it at a certain point in her tenure, that some roadside or ringside people were doing something. It's kind of hazy at this moment because there are a lot of NDAs signed within the WWE and stuff like that, but we do have some information. And you can Google it, obviously, if you want to find some more stuff. And that's going to lead us to our NATO nominee, Matthew G. Whitaker. Obviously, they're going to be U.S. ambassador to NATO. They represent U.S. policy, you know, North Atlantic Treaty Organization, obviously the full name.
Yeah.
You know, they're basically just there for security and policy coordination. He was the former acting U.S. Attorney General. He's focused, you know, mainly on international relations and defense policy, and he's kind of a pretty controversial nominee, and lacks, you know, the pizzazz and the position of a lot of the others. But, you know, he does his job. Hopefully, he does it well, and that's kind of going to move us to HUD or the Secretary of Housing and Development, Scott Turner. Secretary of Housing and Development, obviously, I've been saying obviously a lot because it's pretty self-explanatory. It's in the name. Responsible for housing policy, urban development, and addressing some of the homelessness crisis, especially in a few of the nation's cities, like San Francisco, which we could talk about how that can affect their election, but that's a separate issue. Former executive director at the White House Opportunity Revitalization Council. Bit of a long name. They're just a think tank. And he focuses, you know, on community revitalization and affordable housing. Pretty uncontroversial stuff for a nominee to HUD. Nothing too extreme. Nothing you guys want to say?
No.
All right, so we're going to move on to our last few. And it's going to end up with our last three. CDC, Dave Weldon. Obviously, 2020, 2021, 2022. Pretty controversial person. You know, they manage the center of they are the director, sorry, of the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, oversee public health policy, disease control, epidemiology, I think is how you say it. I'm not a doctor, so L.
I think it's epidemiology for epidemic.
Ah, I see, epidemiology. You know, former U.S. congressman from Florida, he focused on a lot of public health policy and medical issues, especially like some medical insurance stuff in Congress. So nothing too crazy.
Yeah, I will hop in and do the last two. So for Surgeon General, he nominated Janet Nishiwit.
That was the correct way to say it.
Yay! Okay, look at me go. So basically what this position does is they address national health issues, promote health initiatives. So they're also the public health officer. So a little bit about Janet is she's a medical doctor and public health expert. She focuses on preventative health care and
mental health.
Oh, my gosh.
Mental health. I'm just going to take over for the last one just to make sure. Elle doesn't butcher his name. Russell T. Vaught.
How would I have butchered Vaught?
Who knows? You're butchering everything now. He will be the director of the Office of Management and Budget, overseeing, obviously, last time, federal budgeting, financial management, government efficiency, stuff like that. Even though we have Vivek and Elon that will be doing their own little government efficiency thing on the side.
Interesting.
Nothing says government efficiency, by the way, like two people running the same thing. But, you know, he was a former OMB director under Trump. Focus on reducing federal spending, improving government efficiency. He seems like he could lead the agency, but that's obviously his position. He is possibly known by the people who actually read the full sections of Project 2025 as being one of the co-authors and wrote his own little thesis inside of the book on a few issues. Obviously, there are a few people that were from Project 25. The director of communications, who I think we'll talk about later, also has his own little share in the little manifesto. But that's kind of going to end up our cabinet
appointed. No, it won't, because I have a question.
Oh, okay.
My question. Why do you, Ryan, or Ludrana, think that none of the former cabinet members, or I think there was maybe one, that was re-nominated? What happened to those people? Why has Trump kind of lost their loyalty or not wanted to bring them back into his administration?
Not necessarily losing loyalty. Obviously, he's lost loyalty with some of them. But policy over 6 years, or 8 years, sorry, has changed so much. I mean, if you just think about how long 8 years is, policy changes, and you obviously need different people to represent the policy. People take different positions elsewhere in the past 4 years. And people, sadly, have died, a few of his former directors. So, obviously, there's just replacement, especially if it's not consecutive. You kind of have there's obviously problems. And some of the people have been alienated, though, by his former run. I would make a bet that 25% of these people are going to be fired a year and a half in. But we'll see. Obviously, there's high turnover sometimes. Though, record high turnover was on Kamala Harris's VP staff, just for the
Kamala. Record.
Kamala, sorry. And that's going to move us to the non-cabinet positions, which means there is no Senate confirmation required. These people will take the job unless something catastrophic happens. And first of all, obviously, going to take it, J.D. Vance, vice president nominee. He will act as tie-breaking vote in the Senate. He's the author of Hillbilly Elegy. There's not much to say about him. If you don't know him, we have previous episodes that mention him quite prophetically. Now we have the first female chief of staff, Susie Wiles. She's senior advisor and strategist for a while. She ran Trump's 2020 campaign in Florida. Not much else to say about her, obviously. Now, we got some government efficiency right here. Listen to how many deputy chiefs of staff we got. James Blair, Taylor Budowick, Stephen Miller, and Dan Scavino. I'm sorry about that. But obviously, they all have a bit of political experience, especially with the Trump campaign. Some of them have some extensive social media strategy. Stephen Miller is a hardliner on immigration. They all kind of encapsulate the same America First beliefs. Elle, do you want to say anything?
No.
Okay, no. So to move on to a semi-official role, I like the name of it, Border Czar. And that will be Thomas Homan. He is quite notable for his interview in Congress, in which he refuted the claims made by Alex Ocasio-Cortez referenced his people. Time. Yes, there are a lot of people. Holy there's 15 of them in total. We've gone through three or four. He referenced, he basically fought against her. He had been the head of the immigration services for quite a while under both Democratic and Republican administrations. He's a former acting ICE director, advocates for stricter immigration and border security policy.
Let's switch over to the National Security Advisor, who is Michael Waltz.
Another Waltz.
So he's the U.S. Congressman from Florida. He's former
Green Beret, which is obviously just a military title.
And national security expert. Is there anything else to add?
Not particularly.
Okay, so let's go to White House Counsel, which will be headed by Bill McKinley. So he's a former White House counsel under Trump and focuses on legal advice and constitutional law.
So obviously you're seeing people brought back. He's serving mainly just to advise Trump, executive order, stuff like that. He will write up that he'll also be his attorney general, but for stuff that he just wants to talk about. And that's going to bring us into his communications director, and which will bridge right into the next thing we talk about, Stephen Chung. I'm hoping I said that correctly. Not much to say about him. Political consultant for a lifetime and communications expert. Now we'll move us to the press secretary, John.
The press secretary will be Caroline Leavitt, who is a former White House assistant press secretary. She is focused on messaging and media strategy. And correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't she the first woman to hold this position, or am I crazy?
No, she is definitely not the first woman to hold this position.
Can we delete that?
But you were very close. Please. She is breaking barriers, but she's the first Gen Z person to hold the press secretary position. You were right.
Which is a very, very smart move by Trump, I would say. Gen Z is very good when it comes to the media, especially when it comes to kind of what?
No, that's a great takeaway.
It's basically a generation that has grown up with social media and with the press being
she's 27 years old, constantly. So she's quite young for the position, quite young for any position in any administration. Will Scharf for the staff secretary. He's going to be another lawyer, policy advisor. He has experience, obviously, in political operations for Trump and among other things. I assume.
No.
Okay. And then we have some more people. We're just going to run through these really quickly. Personnel, Sergio Gore. He's human resources staffing expert. Not much.
Government efficiency.
Now we get to the fun part. We have some key government. You mentioned both of them in separate.
Okay, yeah. So there's obviously two. The first one is Elon Musk. So he's obviously the CEO of SpaceX and Tesla, and he focuses on efficiency, technology, and innovation in government. And then the second is Vivek Ramaswamy. And he obviously was a
presidential candidate.
Thanks for finishing my sentence.
He's
an entrepreneur and author, and he focuses on corporate governance and regulatory reform.
Okay, now to move on to something really interesting. If you're in the tech world, FCC Brendan Carr wrote a chapter in 2025. There were a lot of legal theories. They might hold up, they might not. He will be the chair of the FCC. He focuses, telecommunications, media, ISPs, stuff like that. And he will have direct connection to a man we just referenced, who also owns an ISP, Internet Service Provider, Elon Musk. So he'll have direct communication with one of the key factors, which is Starlink in communications technology. And now, one of my favorite picks, Deputy National Security Advisor Alex Wong. He was national security expert. Obviously, as I said earlier, he focuses on Asian defense policy. He was the advisor with North Korea for a while. He is quite prolific. He was a Harvard lawyer, and that's kind of where he is. But I think he should be the head national security advisor, but that's my opinion.
The deputy assistant to the president is going to be Sebastian Gorka. He is a former White House strategist and national security expert.
And that's going to sum it up. Hopefully you reached the end. If you didn't, we'll have that later. But, just full disclosure, this document, this podcast, temporary overview of President Trump and his nominations for key cabinet and non-senior cabinet positions, whatever. Its subject should change. We'll get back to you if there's any changes or any additions. There will be in the upcoming weeks and months. It's like the Constitution. It's a living document. So we'll update you as it goes. And that's going to end up this podcast. Let's go to the outro.
And that will conclude this episode of Project 2028. If you have enjoyed this episode, please feel free to go follow us on Instagram at project2028.podcast. If you have any comments that you would like to send to us directly, you can email us at
project2028.pod@gmail.com.
And if you didn't like this podcast, please do neither. Thank you so much for listening, and have a fantastic rest of your day.